independently review those facts and make a determination of probable cause. This is not a terribly onerous task. The officer can simply say, I observed this. Or the officer can say, a witness observed this, and this is why the witness is credible. Or the officer can say, no one observed it, but these are all the surrounding circumstances, and based on these surrounding circumstances, I believe there's probable cause. What the officer can't do is just give a conclusion and then expect that the magistrate is going to accept that. But that's what happened in this case.
Counsel, as you know, we discussed this case yesterday afternoon in preparation. So let me just ask you some questions. The focus of the arguments by both sides is the written affidavit in support of search warrant. There's nothing else, as far as I understand, that the was in front of the magistrate.
That is correct,
Your Honor. When he or she granted the warrant. So when you look at that, the first page, do you have a copy?
I do.
Okay.
Yes.
The first page says that this is an affidavit in support of the search, believing that driving while under the influence was the relevant crime, and that box is checked. Notably, the other box, physical control of the vehicle while under the influence, is not checked.
That is correct, Your Honor.
On the second page of the affidavit, we have a reiteration of what I just said. The box, driving while under the influence, is checked. And then in the paragraph that follows, we have what is represented as the sources of information. That includes interviews of witnesses, et cetera. The next paragraph talks about the training and experience, which for purposes of our analysis I think is irrelevant because we're not talking about a dispute regarding the officer's qualifications or the fact that there was in fact evidence of intoxication. Then the next paragraph says he was involved in a one-car rollover collision. Your position is that doesn't tell us anything about driving.
Yes, it doesn't tell us how the officer knows that he, being Mr. Young, was the driver of a car involved in a one-car rollover collision.
Okay, and then let me jump to the next page, and the reason I do so is that the Rawls Court put some significance in the last sentence of the penultimate paragraph. It said this search warrant is being requested 2 hours, 15 minutes after Anthony Young's. And then it is followed by this terminology. Ceased driving / was found in physical control of a motor vehicle. So the issue, at least one of the issues, is what do we do with that language? The Rouse Court apparently found some significance in the text that follows the forward slash. Found in physical control of a motor vehicle. Well, one way of looking at that is that that was an election or an unelection by the affiant to designate, consistent with the first page, that this was a probable cause based on driving. That's one way of looking at it. So why don't you tell me your version of the significance of that text?
The significance of the text, a couple things. First of all, as you've pointed out, the charge is driving as opposed to, or at least the search warrant is for purposes of driving as opposed to being in physical control. To my mind, the greater concern, though, is that we have the same problem as what we talked about with the other part of the text, which is it simply is a conclusion without telling us how the officer knows that. Did the officer observe that? Did another officer tell him that? Did a witness tell him that? Was it based on the fact that he arrived at the scene and saw that there was someone near the car? It actually looks like he might not have been at the scene because he's talking about the initial contact being a one-car rollover collision transported to the hospital. So it's not clear if, in fact, Mr. Youngs was on a backboard at the hospital or if he was on a backboard at the scene. But again, there is absolutely no independent facts from which the magistrate can look at this and say, yes, based upon what the information you've given me, I can reach a conclusion that this person was the driver.
Well, let me ask you this. One of the arguments that I assume the state will make is that if you pair the previous sources of information on the second page, personal interviews, etc., with this statement that that's sufficient. Why isn't it?
Because, again, it's not giving us the basis by which the officer believes that Mr. Youngs was the driver. If the officer would have said, I saw Mr. Youngs at the scene, I saw Mr. Youngs by there, I spoke to a witness who told me about this Mr. Youngs. But if you just say he was the driver of a car involved in this, it begs the question of how do you know that? And you know, the magistrate can accept an officer's opinion. The magistrate can say, I believe, you know, if you tell me you saw this, I'm willing to accept that. But you at least have to tell the magistrate, I saw this. And we don't have that here. We really don't know the circumstances by which the officer came to conclude that he was the driver of the vehicle.
Does deference to the magistrate, which is a theme of all these cases, mean that you are to, or that we should resolve any questions about inferences in favor of what the officer saw because the magistrate concluded there was probable cause?
Well, you're right that there is deference that's given to the magistrate, but as our Supreme Court has gone out of its way to say, you know, it's not completely unbridled, that there at least has to be the basis for it. And if there had been some assertion in terms of what the officer personally observed or what the basis was, that would have been acceptable. The Stevens case, which I cite to right there, where there was testimony that the defendant was observed watering the marijuana plants. Well, the court said, you know, who observed? That's a conclusory statement, and you need to go ahead and provide a little more information. So, you know, the magistrate has a great deal of discretion, but it's only discretion when they're provided with the facts that allow them to exercise it. And here, they never were given those facts, and so there never was an opportunity to exercise it.
And we can't tell from this affidavit, as you've argued, that whether the trooper, I believe it was a trooper in this case, was at the hospital or at the scene or both.
That is correct.
I have three minutes left.
Thank you.
Have your rebuttal time.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Andrew Alsdorf from the Snohomish County Prosecutor's Office, representing the State of Washington respondent in this matter. I'd like to pick off where your questioning left off and actually assert that under my reading of the search warrant affidavit in this case, there actually is sufficient factual information to determine the sources of information that the trooper was using to state his belief that the defendant was the driver of a motor vehicle.
Well, let me, you've already had a preview of my interest. Let's focus on the language, cease driving / was found in physical control of a motor vehicle. Would you agree that the other information in the affidavit, for example, he was involved in one car rollover collision, is insufficient to tell us anything about whether he was driving?
I would say, the way I would answer that is to say that from the phrase involved in a one car rollover collision, we can absolutely confirm that someone was driving.
Someone driving is irrelevant to the issue before us. We have to know that Mr. Youngs was driving, or probable cause to believe that he was driving.
Sure.
And I guess that a more direct way of saying that is he was driving, or I observed him driving. Would you agree?
That certainly would have resulted in us not being here today had he said that. I agree with that much.
Okay.
And I think the state has acknowledged all along that this affidavit could have been more detailed in its drafting.
Okay, that's fine.
So what I would like to take you through is page 41 of the clerk's papers, which is the second page of the affidavit.
Right.
Where, as you noted, in the upper third of that page, he says his belief is based on information acquired through personal interviews with witnesses and other law enforcement officers, review of reports, and personal observations. Now, I would submit that when we continue reading the actual facts that he does put in the affidavit, we learn a few things. We know that because there was a car in motion and it's a one-car rollover collision, that cars don't roll over by themselves, so that it had to be a car in motion and therefore someone had to be driving. I realize that's not sufficient in and of itself. But when you then realize that the trooper has access to a number of sources of information that would take his beliefs beyond mere suspicion or personal belief, it becomes reasonable to infer that the defendant was driving. And what I'm talking about is we know that the trooper has access to the defendant himself, that the defendant is talking, because the defendant admitted having four beers, did provide a PBT sample, but refused a blood draw. So we know he has access to information from the defendant. We also know, because of this phrase, strapped to a backboard, I would actually submit that it is a much more reasonable inference to determine that strapped to the backboard references medical evaluation and transport from the scene to the ambulance at the scene, rather than being strapped to a backboard at a hospital.
Well, the trooper could have been at the emergency room of the hospital when the patient came in. So you're not telling us anything with respect to the probable cause to believe he was driving. Let's focus on the ceased driving was found in physical control of a motor vehicle, because your time is short, and I want to get to the real heart, at least as I see it, of whether or not probable cause was established. How does that language help us?
Well, we know that the trooper has sworn under oath that based on his observations or his discussions with witnesses, that it's his determination that the person was found in physical control. The most reasonable inference when combined with this one car rollover collision situation is not that the trooper or any medical personnel happened to be there to see the one car rollover collision in the first place, but rather, as one would expect, that law enforcement and medical personnel arrived after the collision had occurred and found the defendant in physical control of a motor vehicle, which is exactly what one would expect if he was injured enough to require being strapped to a backboard to get from wherever he was injured to the hospital. That implies essentially an immobile defendant who requires assistance to move from one location to another.
Well, let me ask you this. This is a pre-printed form.
Yes.
That apparently, I'm assuming, is used statewide. What about my question earlier? It seems to me that that text suggests a choice between two different potential crimes. One is driving while under the influence. The other is physical control of a vehicle. A choice which requires the affiant to make some sort of an election, either between driving or physical control of a motor vehicle. There was no election here. There was no striking out of text. We have both phrases in the sentence. What do we do with that?
I think under the most likely situation that I just finished describing, with a collision followed by medical and law enforcement coming to the scene thereafter, that both of those elective options are actually true. We know that from the physical dynamics of the rollover that someone was driving, and that we know based on the circumstances of coming to a scene and finding an immobile, injured person in need of transport, that the phrase found in physical control of a motor vehicle most likely and reasonably means that he was sitting right in the driver's seat when law enforcement and medical personnel arrived. So I think that despite the fact that this is boilerplate language, when an officer swears under oath that the contents of his affidavit are true, that it is incumbent upon him to cross out things that don't apply. He made the conscious decision not to check the box on the first page, so he didn't check the physical control box on the first page of the affidavit. So he is being conscious and saying, this is not a physical control case, this is a driving case. And then when you get to the latter election that we've been discussing on the third page of this affidavit, he doesn't cross anything out, and indeed, under the circumstance I've described, both of those things would be true. So I would submit that the Superior Court was reasonable and did not abuse its discretion in evaluating and giving great deference to Judge Goodwin, the magistrate in this case, for interpreting that as essentially a dual factual statement, that he both ceased driving and was found in physical control of a motor vehicle.
It seems like your argument depends on the magistrate pyramiding inference upon inference to arrive at the ultimate key fact of this person being a driver or in physical control. Do you have any authority that supports that as part of the deference we give to the magistrate or common sense manner?
Well, I would return us to the standard, and it is easy to get tied up philosophically, if you will, on what exactly is a fact and what exactly is a conclusion, and therefore what is something that requires inference or what is actually just being stated. And I think the standard is what we return to, which tells us that we owe great deference, that we are required to view these in a common sense matter. I think it was Patterson, the Supreme Court in 1974 said, we deal in the factual and practical considerations of everyday life on which reasonable and prudent men, not legal technicians, act, and that common sense must be the ultimate yardstick. I think if we return to that ordinary person approach, that absolutely we view the factual statements, minimal and sparse as they are, in this affidavit as appropriate and would lead any ordinary person to conclude that indeed this was a one-car rollover collision in which the defendant was the driver. Thank you.
Thank you, Kath.
To throw out quotes from the Supreme Court, our Supreme Court has also said that the commissioner must judge for himself the persuasiveness of the facts relied upon by the complaining officer to show probable cause. And if you just go ahead and have boilerplate language that says so-and-so was driving a vehicle, and you don't say how it is that you know that, there is absolutely nothing for the commissioner to evaluate. I want to take just a moment to go ahead, unless the court has a question, and address the Yim case, which was relied upon extensively by the state, but I think it provides the wonderful contrast to what we have here. In Yim, it was an explosive device, and they were getting a search warrant for it. The officer didn't say that he had checked and confirmed that there was no license. So what the court did was they looked to see what are the facts that were contained within the affidavit. Well, the facts were that the transaction occurred in the Northgate parking lot. It happened out of the trunk of a car. The guy insisted on $7,000 in cash only. He said he wanted to get out of there quickly, and he had paperwork on him that was talking about the illegal manufacture of explosives. That was the type of thing that the court could look at and say, you know, even though the officer did not expressly state that he checked this, we can look at these facts and make our own determination. There was nothing supplied to the magistrate in this case that allowed for an independent determination. And because of that, essentially what was being asked of the magistrate is to become a rubber stamp. And so just because the officer believed that he was driving, even though no facts were stated, therefore the magistrate should believe that too. And our law does not allow that. We would ask the court to reverse the conviction in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The next matter is State versus